That is none other than Queen Latifah, vintage 1993, I might add, addressing the disrespect women face. We're exploring the story of women in rap music here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Female rappers have always been part of hip-hop's DNA, but there's really no escaping that rap music has been dominated by the men. Did you grow up listening to rap? How have you seen women add to and influence hip-hop culture? Are women sidelined? Why? We're at 800-642-1234. Michelle Bird McPhee is a hip-hop dancer, choreographer, and teacher. She's an artist in residence at UW-Madison, teaching a course on hip-hop culture, women, and the world. Michelle, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Great you could be here. We also have Kathy Yandely, who is a hip-hop journalist and author of God Save the Queens, The Essential History of Women in Hip-Hop. Kathy, welcome to you.
Good morning. Hi.
Hi. So before we get to the women, set the scene for us, Kathy. Hip-hop is culture. Rap is music. Explain their intersection.
Well, I think when you think about the intersection of culture and music as it pertains to hip hop, you would think about all the elements of hip hop, you know, dancing, graffiti, emceeing, like it's a whole infrastructure, right? And I think that at some point, you know, when the b-boying and graffiti moved over into making music, well, b-boying and graffiti went into DJing and then emceeing, that's where kind of there was a cultural intersection that became, you know, defined as hip hop culture. And I think as the years progressed, we started to see new elements filtering into hip hop to the point where now, because hip hop is the dominant genre, it's now popular culture.
Yeah. Michelle, what do you see at this intersection between hip hop and rap music?
I mean, I think it's really interesting because, you know, the MC was originally created to support the DJ, right? So they were like a hype man for the DJ. It wasn't originally an art form itself. And then, you know, just like every other part of hip hop culture, it became a commodity. It became something that was easy to package and sell. And so, you know, it's now referred to, when people talk about hip hop culture, they're talking about rap music, which is incorrect and part of, I think, would lead to a lot of confusion or misunderstanding about what the culture actually is. So the culture are the people that makes it up, the practice that they do, right? And the community of it. And so I think that's the big missing element when we talk about hip hop culture in all forms, mostly, you know, is that we don't really talk about the communities of Black and Brown people from which it was born.
Yeah, well, let's talk about this community and the women who make up this community. And first with Queen Latifah, this one is from way back, 1989, Ladies First, and featuring Moni Love. Let's listen. And Moni Love here, for her part of the track, told the People's Party podcast that she had a really singular focus.
I wanted to strike fear in the hearts of men in hip hop, as far as what I sounded like on the mic. That was my goal.
Oh, strike fear in the hearts of men, Kathy. Why did Queen Latifah and Moni Love feel the need to really take a stance in the 80s?
Well, I think, you know, before you go into just how the whole Ladies First messaging started, we have to go back to what Moni Love endured when she got here from the UK and wanted to pursue rapping. You know, when she got here, Moni was a longtime hip hop fan and participant out in the UK. And by the time she got here, hip hop was on the up, right? You had all of these prominent men who were signed to Def Jam and other labels, just really feeling themselves. And when Moni got here, she went to the clubs where the guys were performing and battling, and she wanted to get on the stage. And most of the guys, because, you know, she's gorgeous. Most of the guys were spent more time hitting on her and weren't giving her the fair shot to actually go and show what she was about. So Moni went home, she shaved her head, she taped down her breasts, she started dressing in really baggy clothes and showed back up to be taken more seriously in her mind, that she had to eliminate the aesthetic to the point where she had to just hop on stage and say, listen to me, don't look at me. Mm. And I think what Ladies First was, you know, Latifah and Moni had already met in the past in the UK when Queen Latifah was touring there. So by the time Moni got back here, well, moved here stateside, the two of them decided to finally make a track together. And really, initially, it was just them having a good time. You know, they're sitting on opposite sides of the room and they were just like shouting their bars back and forth to each other. And neither of them really understood the impact of Ladies First.
Yeah.
I think until they actually recorded the music video and, you know, the imagery, everything of just showing, you know, prominent Black women at the, on the beginning of the video, and even, you know, Moni dancing in front of the projects and Queen Latifah moving around like a large kind of chessboard style in a boardroom. You know, there was a whole female domination aspect to it. But at the core, when it came to the music, at that point, it was just a manifestation of everything that Moni had been building up towards the moment she hit that stage in the Bronx and was shut down by all the men around her.
Talking with Kathy Yandley, who's a hip-hop historian, Michelle Bird McPhee here as well, hip-hop dancer, choreographer. We're looking at how women have influenced hip-hop through the decades. Michelle, you know, was Ladies First that real first ownership of feminism, of womanism in hip hop? What was special about that moment? What was the intention?
I mean, I think it was special. You know, I Rockefeller, who's a pretty famous B-girl, said to me once, you know, the stronger the move I would do, the deeper, the harder the move I do, the more respect I got from the men. And so, you know, this was, you know, Ladies First was an example of the artistry that it took to be, you know, women who were MCs, right? And, but I think, you know, the one thing I would love to dispel pretty much right now in this conversation is that women have always been part of hip hop culture. We've always been MCs, right? It's just that at that moment was a special moment. You know, Queen Latifah in particular, that, you know, and at that time, Yo-Yo and a bunch of other MCs that were able to be able to get signed and you know, have their own record deals and making money. And that, you know, again, the money moves the world, right? And that's some measure of success to some extent. But, you know, I think what Queen and Moni and a lot of other, you know, like Lauryn Hill and MC Lyte and a lot of other MCs brought, you know, female MCs brought at that time was, you know, a skill level to be, it wasn't about selling their bodies, right? That was the exact opposite of what they wanted to portray, you know? Yeah. So it was more about, I'm just going to drop all these verses in a skilled manner. And I'm still going to be, you know, cute and popular while doing it, you know.
Right. So my words are going to speak quite a bit more than maybe even my body, right? We have Michelle Bird McPhee, hip hop dancer, choreographer. We have Kathy Yandley, who wrote a history of women in hip hop. You can join in. Who are some of your favorite female MCs and why? Why do you think there are so few female rappers? Are they really fewer in number, or they are just not as well recognized, poorly promoted? Join in 800-642-1234. We'll pick this up in a minute here on the Ideas Network. Ah, that is hip hop superstar Lauryn Hill, her rendition of Roberta Flack's Killing Me Softly. If you're just joining us, we're exploring how women have changed hip hop culture and why they are undervalued in the genre. It's The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. This music has been around for decades, decades. Do you appreciate the 80s with Queen Latifah, Salt and Peppa, MC Light? How about the contemporary work of Cardi B? Join in 800-642-1234. We have Michelle Bird McPhee, hip hop dancer, choreographer, teaching a course at UW-Madison on hip hop. Kathy Yandley, longtime hip hop author and journalist. They stay with us for the hour. Let's bring in Dan, who's joining us from La Crosse. Hi, Dan.
Hi. I'm sorry I'm not a woman. I'm old enough to remember back into the 70s, Reverend Jesse Jackson had Operation Push out of Chicago. He told the black record company owners, if you keep pushing junk on our people, we will boycott you if push comes to shove. I was the second rap musician in La Crosse. My good friend Eric was the first, but I was the first published rapper. He was more into the rap culture. Mine is more, for example, I wrote Saddam and Gomorrah about the time of the first Gulf War. Won't Stop Respecting That Self of Mine, We Three Queens. So mine's different, but this goes way back, and there has been exploitation and abuse of women in rap and other styles of music for a long time.
Kathy, what would you say there to Dan and, you know, being early on and what he has seen through the years of the sexism and the racism?
I think that, you know, in the earliest years of hip hop, when you're talking about, you know, the early to mid 70s, where the pioneers of hip hop were kind of building this, you know, it was a different kind of sexism, especially because these were 13-year-olds and 14-year-olds who were getting on the mic for respect and just recognition, you know. And we have to shout out the first female MC, Sha Rock, first female MC soloist, MC Debbie D, and of course Lisa Lee, or together they were the Us Girls. But a lot of these women who were attempting, well, young girls at the time who were attempting to break through, endured a considerable amount of sexism, because at that point in time it was just something that everyone was trying to move forward with, and in a very beginner way, right? Yeah. So there were some little bits of sexism that were happening when teenagers, like for example, the Mercedes ladies used to, when they were performing, some of the male acts would purposely unplug their sound system so that when they got on stage, no one heard anything and they were getting booed. It was those kinds of things. But it wasn't really until money was being made that you started to really see the sexism that was happening for women, because it was all fun and games when you were kind of quote unquote allowing women into the space to have their shot and be kind of the novelty in a group, you know, the funky 4+1, that plus one was Sha Rock, and being the one female member of the crew. And it wasn't until money was being made that suddenly women were no longer welcome. And I think that the interesting part about it was when it came to popularizing hip hop over radio, there was one person who did that, and that was Roxanne Shanté. And the fact that that radio presence was pushed by a woman and then suddenly kind of forced to take a step back just shows how many times that women pioneered things, black women pioneered things in hip hop, and then were kind of forced back into the shadows.
Michelle, I'm white. There is a racist misunderstanding of the cultural roots of rap that black Americans, black musicians, black women musicians encounter in this genre. How does structural racism discredit the linguistic artistry of this genre?
I mean, you know, systemic racism affects everything that, you know, we as black people do. I think, you know, a lot of the content that gets that, you know, makes it through and is, it becomes part of popular culture is those things that don't attack or address those things, right? So the things that don't really attack or address sexism and the misogyny of hip hop culture, and the things that don't, you know, attack the race, you know, it's like fun and games. It's all good stuff. You know, it's all things that are seen through the male gaze, right? Even if it's coming from a female MC that, that is in control of her own words, is writing, you know, her own words. And, you know, maybe she's still, you know, writing about being on a pole or whatever. But she's empowered through, you know, being in control of that, but that's still what is, you know, put to the forefront of popular culture. But I will say that I think that these conversations around sexism, misogyny, the racism within hip hop, it's all reflective of popular culture, right? I mean, I think we get a lot dumped on us in hip hop culture. Like, I mean, is sexism any more, and misogyny any more prevalent in hip hop culture than it is in the world culture? No, it's not. You know, it's a reflection of world culture. And so I think what I want to start to do when I have these opportunities to, you know, talk about hip hop culture is like, you know, let's start to dispel this myth that it's this, you know, violent, misogynistic community. I mean, it's enabled me to buy a house. It's enabling me to send my son to college, you know, because, you know, my husband is also in the business, you know, and we've been, you know, we make our living through hip hop culture. So like, let's be clear that this is more than just the music that you hear on
it's
the radio.
Industry.
That's such a small part of what the culture is about, right? There's real musicians that are part of bands, you know, there's real artistry that goes into being an MC and male or female. And so I think we need to start to kind of, take these opportunities to dispel a little bit of that and push back a bit, because I appreciate his question, but it's just a reflection of popular culture. It's just a reflection of American culture.
Michelle Bird McPhee, hip hop dancer, choreographer, teaching a course at UW-Madison on hip hop culture, women in the world. Kathy Yandely with us as well, hip hop journalist and author. We're looking at the influence of women in hip hop over the decades with your questions and your insights. 800-642-1. 1-2-3-4. Victor is joining us from Madison. Hi, Victor.
Hi, how's it going? I just want to tell you about a little song that I have on bandcamp.com, and it's a kind of a nod to Kamala Harris, and the title of the song is Take Me to Your Leader. I'd really like to meet her. And the artist is Vavoosh, V-A-V-O-O-S-H. And it's just a fun little song for everyone of all ages. It's G-rated. So,
well, Victor, thank you for sharing about that song. Kathy, have you heard it?
I have not, but I will definitely check it out.
Yeah. Victor, thanks. Emmett is with us from Milwaukee now. Hi, Emmett.
Yes, thanks. I just wanted to kind of comment on some of the really talented MCs that seem to be a little bit under the surface. I mean, there's, you got Rhapsody, you got Tierra Whack, Rico Nasty. It doesn't seem like any of them are really, at this point, going to break the mainstream, but they seem to have had pretty successful careers kind of on the sort of doing YouTube and smaller shows. Is this kind of a career path that some female MCs are sort of being forced into, where they have this immense amount of talent, but they just don't seem to be able to crack the glass ceiling?
Michelle, you first.
I think, you know, rap is super dope. And I think she's critically acclaimed for sure. And all the other MCs he named are critically acclaimed for sure. But I think that that's also something that is part of, you know, the rap culture as a whole, right? Like, there's very few that are, you know, what we used to call backpack rappers, right? So, which is like, you have sort of a message and, you know, it has some like social activism, or you're super kind of intelligent or something like that. Those things don't make it through either, right? And so, yes, I feel like I can't say, I feel like Rhapsody might make it through a little bit. I mean, she's pretty new to the main stage. She's not new to her career, but she's pretty new to the main stage. And she's really getting embraced by, you know, some really heavy hitters. Yeah. So I'm hoping that, you know, like we're all crossing our fingers and hoping that she can make it a little bit more mainstream, because we do need, she does have a super positive message. She's amazingly talented. And I don't think we've had anybody, you know, Lauren's an anomaly because she can sing just as well as she can rap. But, you know, just in terms of like her MC skills, I'm comparing her to a Lauryn Hill in yeah. terms of that possibility of that success. And we haven't had anybody with that level of success that's on, a, you know, aligned with that same kind of artistry.
Yeah, check out.
I'm not saying that Cardi is not not talented for what she does as well. It's not to, you know, I don't want to do respectability politics. It's about, you know, it, you know, there's a lane for everybody.
Sure. But, yeah. And Rhapsody song, Nina, a tribute to Nina Simone, just so powerful, so powerful. We're talking with Michelle Bird McPhee on Women in Hip Hop, Kathy Yandely here as well. Back after this news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network.
Clap, power, clap, power, clap. Yo, I'm burning your city, they feel me black and I'm witty. While y'all still argue about Nicki Iggy, I'm killing these Mickey's Biggie. Talking about mice and men, I'm talking about God again. I can flip it like Rodman, you a rebound, a vitamin. More I'm lethal as Latican. Up the wall, I've been spidering.
That's Rhapsody performing Godzilla at her NPR Tiny Desk Concert, people. NPR Tiny Desk Concert, shout out there. Rhapsody became the first woman to win the Lyricist of the Year award at the BET Hip Hop Awards. We're spending the hour exploring women's influence in hip hop here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Do you think female rappers are given the same respect? Do their talents and techniques get lumped together? How do you feel about that? Join in 800-642-1234. We have author Kathy Yandely, who wrote The History of Women in Hip Hop, and Michelle Bird McPhee, hip hop dancer, choreographer, in residence here at UW-Madison. They stay with us for the hour. Let's bring in Andy now, joining us from Milwaukee with thoughts on this genre. Andy, hi.
Hi, how are you? Good morning.
Good morning. What would you like to add?
I just wanted to add that we have a mantra between me and my girlfriends, and we have forever, and it's kind of been our, like, our like backbone to making career decisions and educational decisions. And it's been a Missy Elliott lyric. and it's ain't no shame, ladies, do your thing. Just make sure you're ahead of the game. And we've shared that with each other forever. And it's always been like a pinnacle feminist statement to us that whatever you do, as long as it's your choice on your terms, it's okay. Just make sure that you're always like one step ahead of everybody yeah. else. And it's always kind of been like, whatever you do in your career, in your life, if you're a stay-at-home mom or an engineer or a bus driver, like just make sure it's on your terms and you're always one step ahead. And so I feel like Missy Elliott's lyrics are always very feminist and just really pushing women forward in like their career. I feel like it's always that kind of statement is yeah. kind of just the cornerstone.
Yeah. Having your true north there, Missy Elliott. Kathy, what would you like to add?
I mean, that's a perfect line as a mantra, especially since, you know, Work It just in general is an inspirational song in so many different ways. But Missy Elliott, you know, specifically, I think is just someone who is a true testament to where hard work and just true raw talent gets you. And she always played by her own rules, you know, from the moment she entered the scene at a point where, you know, in the late 90s, there was more of this kind of, you know, sex positivity that started happening in hip hop. And while Missy still promoted that, she was also just adding an abstract element, you know, wearing the large garbage bag costume for the rain and just continuously pushing this artistic value within her music and her videos. And I think that, you know, she is someone who, when you're trying to figure out how to level up, you can look to her because she was just a trailblazer for so many things. And I'm just so happy that in recent years, she's finally getting her flowers, because I feel like so much of her, you know, part in popular culture and of course hip hop culture just was really overlooked for so long, because either a man would pick it up and start doing it and then, you know, be referred to as the trailblazer, or, you know, so many female artists and male artists who are white who would then get more of the recognition for the things that Missy was doing ages ago. So, yeah.
Michelle, when they're given the platform, when these artists, through their hard work, through their talent, through their Missy Elliott, if you will, when they're given that platform, what can happen?
Yeah, I mean, Missy is unique as well, because the thing about Missy is that she's a producer and a writer. So she, you know, she came through making her own music, you know, a lot, you know, in collaboration with Timberland as well. But, you know, producing and writing for other people. So, you know, the fact that she then came through creatively so different than everybody else, I'm not surprised. Mm-hmm. You know, she was, you know, she was in a group when she was really young, and, you know, she didn't get any play or any support because of her body image. And, you know, she just wasn't sellable, you know, in the market the way that they wanted to sell groups, whether it was Black women or men or whatever. Everything had a template and she wasn't it, you know. And so she came through and was just like, well, since I'm not it, I have this opportunity. I'm gonna do everything that I can creatively. You know, she embraced real street dance culture, bringing in pioneering dancers. So, you know, she did it differently than having, like, let me hire the best LA dancers. And, you know, she really went for authenticity, and that she was in control of her creative process from beginning to end, you know, having a lot of input and direction, you know, with Hype Williams and some of her videos. Like, she was in a golden age of hip hop in terms of when it was making a change. And she really took that opportunity and ran with it. And, you know, the same, you know, same thing Kathy said, I'm happy that she's getting her due and recognition for the contribution, because she is really, you know, I think one of a kind in hip hop culture, even for a man or for a woman. You know, there aren't many people who are doing their process from beginning to end.
Michelle Bird McPhee, hip hop choreographer, teaching a course at UW-Madison this semester called Hip Hop Culture, Women and the World. Kathy Yandely here as well, hip hop journalist, historian for the genre as we look at women's contributions through the decades. Let's bring in Jody now in Madison. Hi, Jody. What do you observe here?
Hi. Well, I have a young daughter right now who's kind of, she's coming into her own voice, and sometimes she'll say stuff and I'll be like, dang, that's like her unencumbered self. And I'm like, you know, her feminist forebears have really done the work. And it's like, I find it really kind of, I was wondering, as a guest, I find it fascinating, kind of listening to the younger generation now and like hearing what they have to say. And I'm wondering if your guests have any kind of observations on the evolution of like female voices and of themes, or where like maybe the hope is today, or just kind of observations on feminist, really young feminist power coming up.
Thanks. Jody, thank you. Where is that hard-hitting language, the clever lyrics that really go to the bone on feminism? Michelle?
Oh yeah, I'm floored and super motivated by, you know, the younger generation. I think they do not have any filters, and I think they are creating what we always hoped, making even more space, right? And unapologetically doing what they do. And, you know, I'm, you know, of a different generation, but I still need to be able to see that the work that we did, you know, within the culture is now coming through with the youth, and being, you know, doing a large international festival. And even though I'm a dancer and choreographer, you know, I'm an adjunct professor, you know, I also, every element of what we do in hip hop culture is part of my festival. So we have authors, we have in our panel discussions, we have female MCs perform. We have graph artists paint live within some of our events. We have all female DJs, and we have all female teachers and all female battlers. And I literally have women from every edge of the earth come to this once a year. And it is just, I'm floored by what I see, because, you know, when I originally started doing this, the generation that I am, it was very few of us who were present together. And now I'm looking at hundreds of women coming together over one weekend and celebrating who we are. Mm. And so I see the change, and, you know, I see the feminist work and the work that women have done in hip hop culture coming through, you know, and I'm super excited for whatever happens in the future. Lyrically, again, like, I don't know that I know all the younger feminine MCs. I think I kind of stop at Rhapsody, you know, because I have a son in college. So I'm going to be perfectly honest, I'm not that young. I might look at people think that I am, but I'm not that young. So I kind of, you know, I'm from, you know, I'm also from Philly. So my, you know, my connection Philly, to music, yeah. And yeah, Lady B, you know, I know Sha Rock was one of the first female MCs, but Lady B was also recorded, you know, who is a disc jockey and a MC from Philly. She was recorded in 1979 or 78 mm-hmm. as well. And so Philly has its own kind of hip hop history and connection. And then, you know, my husband's the Roots production manager. So we've been enthralled in music and in dance, in hip hop culture, pretty much for the last, you know, well, all of my life for sure, you know, growing up with it, but you yeah. know, for the last 30 years.
Kathy, so. What do you see from those early roots of feminism that are rising up today in some of these more contemporary, modern, young MCs?
I think what we have now is women who grew up with hip-hop, right, and were a part of hip-hop culture are now opening doors for younger women to have this opportunity and not learn as they go along, right? Like the things that Michelle is doing, that's just amazing, because that lays the foundation for young feminists. You know, when you're talking about the 13, 14 year olds, and I do have to shout out Lady B as well, because she was an absolute pioneer in recorded music through, you know, she recorded around the same time as Sha Rock. And a lot of the artists were getting started, but from with no groundwork, they were the groundwork, right? Mm. So over the years, as more women continue to, you know, break down walls in hip hop culture, you're now just allowing, you know, younger women to come in and find their own voices. But, you know, there had to be women, I would like to say, like myself, you know, who's been doing this for 20 years. And funny enough, Michelle, one of my first jobs was working with the Roots. So,
oh, yeah, man. Yeah. It's a small world. We realize in this business it's very small.
We have to pause here. Author Kathy Yandely wrote A History of Women in Hip Hop, God Save the Queens, Michelle Bird McPhee, In the Industry, Dancer, Choreographer. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. This one is for the boys with the booming system. Top town AC with the coolest system. When he come up in the club, he be blazing up. Got stacks on deck like he's saving up. And he ill, he real, he might got a deal. He pop bottles and he got the right kind of bill. He cold, he dope, he might sell coke. He always in the air, but he never fly couch. He a motherfucker. Nicki Minaj showing up on the Ideas Network. Here with us for the morning show. 37-year-old, she's a new mom. Stepped away from the mic to be a mom, much to her fans' chagrin. We're talking about women in hip-hop culture, their contributions through the decades here on The Morning Show. Michelle Bird McPhee is a hip-hop dancer, choreographer, artist in residence at UW-Madison. Kathy Yandely, longtime hip-hop journalist and author of the book God Save the Queens. Let's bring in Karen now in Madison with thoughts on hip-hop. Hi, Karen.
Hi. First, thanks for emphasizing that sexism and misogyny is not unique to hip-hop culture, nor did it begin with hip-hop. It's really, you know, prevalent. We have a nonprofit called Urban Community Arts Network in Madison. We work with a lot of independent local artists. And I was wondering, what advice do you have for women, rappers, MCs, DJs, who are really trying to break through but feel, you know, kind of beaten down or exhausted by the sexism that they experience?
Kathy, you first, advice on breaking through in this industry.
I would say first and foremost that success in 2020 is arbitrary, right? I think that, you know, so much of the idea of quote unquote fame in the music industry has, you know, been defined by just what's being seen in, you know, in front of the cameras. And for any female MC who's looking to break, they should enter understanding that, where you can have incredibly, incredibly successful artists who don't necessarily have to have, you know, 10 million followers on Instagram or, you know, headlining festivals. I mean, what is a festival in 2020 now anyway? But it's more having continuous opportunities that provide a continuous stream of income and serving your continuous fan base that truly makes a successful artist. And I challenge even how, you know, popular music standards define success too, because so many artists will appear successful then we learn they file bankruptcy, you know, 2 years later. And I know so many artists who, you know, we had mentioned Rhapsody, you know, dear friend of mine, and her success, you know, I think that Rhapsody deserves all of the success and deserves all of the respect. And now we're starting to see, you know, in real time, just how successful and respected she is. But this has been going on for her for quite a while. I think there's times where, you know, she has been, you know, quite frankly, insulted, not getting the Grammy nomination for Eve is one of them. But I think, again, the metrics, a Grammy doesn't define a successful career, you know?
Yeah.
It makes people think you're famous, you know? And I think fame and success are not mutually exclusive either.
And Eve, you know, that album being an ode to the history of the civil rights movement and the Black women who broke barriers, Queen Latifah, Alia, Maya Angelou. So that album speaks volumes.
Oh my gosh, absolutely. I mean, that album, you know, it was so groundbreaking. But again, you know, like Michelle had mentioned, the male gaze is real, you know, and the idea of it's no coincidence that the moment Rhapsody created an entire project honoring groundbreaking women, it suddenly slid under the radar. I mean, it's no coincidence.
Michelle, breaking through, what would you add here?
I think, you know, I'm going to just echo what Kathy said. I think we need to redefine what success means. I think that you also need to know that probably not to the extent that women, but people who often experience the level of success that people define a success often give up a lot too. Creatively, they give up a lot. They give up rights to their music. You know, I mean, there is a lot of compromise to be in that space. Those people who just become famous just based off of their talent and just go through and do their own thing. The reason why they made such a big deal about Chance not signing with anyone, because that just doesn't happen. You know, you sign with people, you give away certain percentages of the rights of music that you've owned and created and built. And, you know, that's what you have to give up for success in that realm, right? But I think, you know, if you're able to redefine what success means to you and create the community that you want to see, create a space for you and the women in that space to celebrate. And I'm not saying kick out the men, not at all. I always say women are dope and we know that. We need men in our space so that they know that, right? And so that it's not about creating this exclusive women only space. I do believe that there are times and moments for those and that we do need those. But I also believe if women are creating, you know, like you be the one who's throwing parties and you invite you create the lineup. So we need to become the organizers. We need to be the audio engineers. We need to be the LDs. We need to be the people behind the scene creating the experience so that we're defining what the artist's experience is, right?
Yeah.
Because as a woman who's
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to reintroduce you here. Michelle Bird McPhee is a choreographer teaching a course at UW-Madison this semester called Hip Hop Culture, Women in the World. Kathy Yandely here, hip hop journalist, historian for the genre, as we look at women's contributions through the decades to hip hop. Your insights as well, 800-642-1234. Michelle, I want to ask you this because I was listening to choreographer Jaquel Knight yesterday on NPR on All Things Considered, and he's copywriting some of his work, which is really uncommon for choreographers, incredibly involved. And he was the choreographer behind this summer's huge hit WAP, Megan Thee Stallion, Cardi B. And I want to just warn everyone, next 22 seconds, we're playing an excerpt here, but it's okay. It's okay. Let's listen. Got put this wet, wet. When I from the top, make it drop. That's some wet, that's some wet. When I get a bucket and a mop, that's some wet, that's some wet. I'm talking wop, wop, wop. That's so some wet. Yes, it is. All right. Yeah. So, Michelle, I want to ask you about the choreography here, which we haven't touched this hour. What is the role of intellectual property in choreography?
Ooh, good one. I feel like we're not often as dancers and choreographers even encouraged to do that. A lot of us don't know about that process. I think, you know, it leads to a lot of erasure and miscoding of things that are created by Black and Brown people, and that I think he's super intelligent for doing that, but he also has the money to do it, right? Because let's be honest, it costs money to do that, right? So a lot of the reasons why, you know, and dance as an art in particular, I think, you know, we're always low on the scale. You know, when we come to a project, whether, you know, like The Baby, who is a huge rapper and made, you know, millions off of his music so far, you know, he paid dancers $50 for one of his most videos that he got the most hits on. And he had like, I don't know, 75, 100 dancers on that set, and they all got paid $50, you know, and I know because I know dancers who worked on it, you know, and it became a backstory that became huge within the community. It kind of went viral on Instagram with all these testimonies of like, you know, we have to do better, you know, requiring that we, you know, at least are paid a standard wage. And those were like, you know, I don't know, 12-hour set days. And it was like 3 days or something crazy like that. And they got like $50 a day. And they made the video. They made the song, you know. So it's super smart that, you know, dancers and choreographers are moving into the space of, you know, citation and you know, copywriting intellectual property, because it's not very often that we're taught to do that. And, you know, as we know, look at TikTok, everything that we create is stolen and redone. So,
well, and we're short on time here. So, Kathy, the last word is you here. What are you watching for among the women in this industry? Where are they headed?
To the top, where they belong.
I wanna end it right there. Thank you both for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me.
Michelle Bird McPhee, hip-hop dancer and choreographer, teaching a course at UW-Madison this semester called Hip-Hop Culture, Women and the World. Kathy Yandely, longtime hip-hop journalist, author of God Save the Queens, The Essential History of Women in Hip-Hop. Oh, yeah. We're going to go out with Lauryn Hill right into 1A. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. What a pleasure. It is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.